everyone, and welcome to Minute 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Tyler Howitt of the Couch Potato Philosophy Podcast. Welcome back, Tyler.
It is, as always, glad to be here.
Well, hopefully you're in a mood to chit-chat a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
The girl had the day off, so we'll have to see.
That's right.
So, Minute 7 begins with John finishing his question and ends with Argyle starting to get a little too personal with his questions.
Yes, he does, and it's great.
Yes.
Because it pushes John right out of his comfort zone off the bat, and I love it.
Yes. Yes, and it also gives us a lot more information than we had beforehand, which is,
yes,
I guess, the main reason why they're doing it.
100%. This is also, you know, this is how you do exposition well. You know, so many movies just have exposition dumps where you don't know why somebody is telling you their entire life story. It's a conversation. They don't know each other, so there's a reason to be talking about it. Argyle's nervous. He's chatting him up. He's nervous, so he's also, you know, going too personal. But I think it is a great way to do exposition in a film like this.
Yes, I completely agree with you on that. So yesterday we ended the minute with John saying, "Okay, Argyle," and we continue with, "What do we do now?" Which is such a great question, you know.
It's good.
And I love Argyle's response. I was hoping you could tell me.
Now, yeah, and you're like, wait.
What I wonder is, what's the big deal here? You know, Argyle has been hired. You know, he's been hired. Yeah. Maybe he works in a limo company. I'm assuming he's not working for Nakatomi himself, based on the way that it's shown in the movie. But you don't know.
Yeah.
I assume not. But, you know, he's been given instructions: pick this guy up at the airport and take him to Nakatomi. So what's the big deal? Like, why is he making such a who cares?
I always wondered if it was almost the social part of it, like the I was hoping you could tell me, meaning, do I need to go get your bags? Do I need to carry your bags for you? That's how I read it, because he obviously knows where he's going.
Right.
Is it, do we stand here and talk, or do we just go?
Right. There could be. And then, you know, Argyle lets us in on a little secret that he goes, it's my first time driving a limo. You know, which is pretty funny, you know, that they decided to add that in here, you know, to make it that this guy has, you know, we're going to find out a little later that he is a professional driver, but this is the first time that he's actually driving a limo.
Yep.
You know, so it gives us a little bit more about him, you know, that and I think also it shows somewhat of the difference. And John's response is, "Oh, that's okay. It's my first time riding in one," which I think is also, they're trying to show social classes here.
Yes.
Which goes back to the question that you asked yesterday as to whether, you know, which we couldn't get a definitive answer on, whether John was flying first class or not, because he's not, I assumed, and I still assume, that he's not flying first class because that's just not who he is. You know, just like he's saying now, "I've never driven in a limo before." You know, he's not high society. He's upper, I guess you could say upper middle class, you know, because,
well, particularly with Holly's job has probably pushed him into the upper middle class.
Well, it's pushed her. It hasn't pushed him.
That's true.
You know, we don't know how long she's had this job for. Right. We'll get to that.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah. They bring something up that says something about that, but you know, it shows the two of them. It also shows the converse way of looking at both Argyle and John.
Yeah.
You know,
one ingratiates Argyle right to John. It ingratiates them to each other right away, because they're both on the wrong foot essentially. And, you know, they're not sure where to go, what to do. And I think it ingratiates both of them to us right away too, of, okay, if I'm the guy walking up in the airport, I mean, how often have you been the guy with the, not the guy with the sign, but the guy looking for a sign. I haven't.
I haven't a lot. Maybe
you're
looking for family.
You always,
you know, that type of thing. But you see the people waiting for them. You know,
and so it's, it, it kind of puts you into that, what would that be if I was the guy? You know, you do think that is, oh, I wish I've even gone through my head of, what if I just told him that? Yeah, I'm Joe Smith over there. Yeah, totally. You know, just, but you never have, cause you're not that gutsy, but it just, it's one of those things you think about doing.
Well, George did that once, didn't he? He knew some guy was, there was this guy that missed a plane, and George saw when they landed that there was a limo waiting for this guy, and he pretended to be him, and it turns out that they were like neo-Nazis or something like that, you know.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, I remember that.
That would be a problem.
Yeah, I've actually only driven in a limo once in my life, and it was, I remember, I think it was probably in like 11th grade or something like that, we did I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, and we did a scavenger hunt around the city. And we all had like different, there were different teams, and each team was going in a limo, and it took us all over the place and stuff like that. It was a lot of fun. I don't remember enough about it, like what we were looking for and stuff like that. But I still remember being in a limo at that point for that.
Yeah. I never driven in a limo. I have sat in a couple of limos, I think they were at museums. There was a car museum or something like that. I've sat in a limo, but even for my wedding, we had, it was a friend of the family who, had just a really nice, it was a nice Mercedes and like an old vintage Mercedes. And he drove us home, but so it wasn't a limo there, but it's one of those you always think of. But for me, I always think, ooh, what would that be like? Just cause I haven't done it.
Right. I mean, I think at my first wedding, I'm on my second marriage now. And the first one, I think when we were taking pictures, we were at like this nice place to take pictures. And there was another couple that was there, and they had a limo, and we just like took pictures next to the limo.
You know, there you go.
Just to have them, you know, not that they mean anything anymore, you know, but that's separate issue.
Sure.
We won't get into that.
No.
And then the shot changes, and we get to see the hood of the limo. And I love the shot because we can see the reflection of both Argyle and John in the hood.
Yes.
You know, it shows that whoever washed this limo did such a spick and span job there. Yep. You know, that it really shines.
It's a fancy limo.
It's a very fancy limo, and you can see them. You know, and then we see the two of them, and, you know, it's still funny for me, even though I've seen this movie so many times, the fact that John is sitting up front, you know.
Oh, every time. And the bear sitting in back.
And the bear sitting in back.
Which is also just funny.
Right. Because, again, you know, I mentioned before that I've only been in a limo once, but based on what you see in movies and based on what you know, in a limo, you sit in the back. Also in a taxi.
And there's a up and you're not going to talk.
Exactly. Yeah. In a taxi. Unless you're more than enough people to sit in the back, you're all sitting in you know, you're just sitting in the back. You know, you don't sit in the front. So
no, and you're just definitely not going to start off with what the next line is here, of Argyle being so excited to show off everything. So it shows that equalizing of, again, we're talking about class. So we're talking about these almost power dynamics between these characters, and John is determined to not be above this guy. You know, and he's determined to. We are going to just sit here and we are going to chat.
Yeah. So then,
even though he doesn't really want to talk,
exactly. Then Argyle says, "Relax, we got everything in this mug, man. Look at this: CD, CB, TV, telephone, full bar, VHS."
And he starts laughing. Ooh, that VHS player. Yeah. Right. And he's so excited, and you can tell even more. This is one of those, you know, showing rather than telling. We were told before that this is his first time, but you can tell he's so excited about having all of this stuff in the car that he gets to drive. And I think it's just great.
Yeah. And part of the question that I ask is, okay, John's sitting up front and he's telling him all these things. Most of these things are probably for someone in the back. So like, is he trying to convince him, okay, I'm going to pull over and you can go in the back and, you know, use the CD or use the TV or whatever you want, use the full bar. You know, it's maybe funny. I mean, again, it's, as you said, it's used here in order to let us know, you know, how excited Argyle is to be driving this limo. Yeah. John isn't fazed by any of this stuff at all. He doesn't say to himself, "Ooh, you have a VHS." You know, it's like, it doesn't matter to him from any of these things.
It really doesn't.
Yeah.
No, none of it tempts him. I'm sitting in the front.
Yeah. The truth is, I mean, you see John yawning as he's saying all this, which is even funnier. Yep. You know, here he's just gotten off the 4-hour flight or 5-hour flight from New York, and you know, he's tired and he doesn't really care about all these things that.
No, he wants his cigarette, and he's gonna smoke in the car while they talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So, all right, now Argyle just listed off a whole bunch of things. Let's test your knowledge on some of these things.
Yep.
All right. So, in last season, I spent quite a lot of time talking about CDs. So I'm not going to go that far into it right now. But so, you know, back in 1988, CDs were not that as popular as they are, or actually they're no longer popular now either. But,
no.
You know, they're not as popular as they were over the 20-year period from the 90s till, you know, the 2010s.
Of that list, the VHS is the one that's coming, is weirdly coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So a CD is a digital optical disc data storage format, which was developed by Philips and by Sony in order to store and play digital audio recordings. The first compact disc was manufactured. Do you know when? What would be your guess?
Oh, shoot. 82.
Wow, that's great. How'd you know that?
That's right. I have no idea. I knew early 80s, but I didn't know anything else.
Oh, that's great. And it was known as a digital audio compact disc. Later on, they adapted the format to be able to store data for CD-ROMs.
Sure.
And then they started creating write-only audio and data storage. So they had the CDRs and CDRWs and VCDs.
Oh, I remember when I had my CDRW. Yeah. That was the best because you could make multiple playlists that you burned. And after you for sure legally downloaded things off of LimeWire and Napster.
There you go. Yeah. And then, you know, people were putting photo CDs, they create photo CDs, picture CDs, you know, enhanced music CDs and stuff like that.
Yep.
But if you want to hear more about that, you can go back to, I think it was either episode 91 or 92 of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles to hear more about CD. I mentioned a lot more there. Yeah. So the next thing he mentions is a CB. So,
yeah.
This is mentioned here because, you know, once again, check out CB. This is mentioned for later.
Because we need it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because CB is not something that people really would use that often. Even in the 1980s, it was not a common thing that people were using. This was something that truckers were using.
Yes.
You know, and people who wanted to be in touch with truckers. That's what I would say. You know.
Fair.
So it's mentioned here just from the perspective so that later on when it pops up in the movie, so we know why it's popping up and why it's been mentioned before, you know, that type of thing. Now, do you know what CB stands for?
Citizens Band, I believe.
Tyler, you're great. I didn't need to do any research here. I could have just asked you and that would have been it.
Now, do I know? I guess it's supposed to differentiate it, I guess, between, I would assume, between government radio and citizen and like regular old people radio. I assume.
Exactly. Yeah, that's probably I'm pretty sure that's the reason for it. So they would have 40 different channels that would run at 27 megahertz in the high frequency band. Citizens Band is distinct from other personal radio service allocations, such as, and it gives a whole list of them, including ham radios and military. Yep. And stuff like that. So,
ham. I don't know what that one stands for. I know that it exists, but I don't know what it stands for.
Yeah, I don't remember what it stands for either. It's an amateur radio service. So I don't know why it was called ham. I didn't look into that because you know, we're talking about TVs. I didn't think to even go there. You know. So yeah. So it actually was. They started using it in 1945. The FCC commissioned it in 1945 to permit citizens to have their own radio band for personal communications. And in 1948, the CB radios were designed for operation on the 460 to 470 megahertz band. Right. And they had two different classes of CB radios. They had the A and B. And B was the simpler ones. And they had more limited frequency range with them.
Oh,
so I guess it was like, okay, these are for the geeks and these are for the non-geeks.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. And then small businesses started using it in the 60s, and then it started becoming very popular with truckers.
Sure.
And, you know, most, I mean, I remember growing up, when I was growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, whenever you were talking about CVs, it was truckers.
Yeah, 100%.
I think at one point we had, like, maybe we were, you know, taking a trip with the family or something like that, and we had a CB, and we were, like, talking to all these different truckers along the way and stuff like that. You know, everyone had their, what are they called? Their call signs. There you go.
Yeah.
Call signs and stuff like that.
It felt like when I was growing up, everybody, I grew up actually in rural Michigan, a little bit south of Lansing. And everybody I knew had a friend who had their CB radio. And, you know, that was the, you know, if we weren't making prank calls, we were making prank CB calls. And then there was the urban legends of, like, if you do that, ooh, they're going to find you and they'll. And
they made a lot of movies about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So apparently Mel Blanc was an active CB operator, and his
I
handles
that. He was just having fun.
His handles were both Bugs and Daffy, which is great. Betty Ford, the former first lady, was also a CB handler. Her handle was first mama.
of course it was.
Well, it makes sense. Why not?
Sure. Why not?
So yeah, that's pretty much. But again, I love the fact that they just throw this in here.
Yeah.
You know, it's thrown in. Yeah. You know, they're giving us a whole list of things, and this is the only one that's important of the six different things that he mentions. But you don't know that when you're first watching this.
No, he's just listing it off, and it's in the middle of it all, so it's not the first. Hey, we have this CB radio, just so you know. He's just listing it off. Yeah. The other one that might be, going back to our discussion yesterday, might be the fact that there's a telephone. He could have said, you know what, wait, I need to call my wife and let her know we're on our way or something like
that. The telephone's in the back.
Nope. Oh, true. It's in the back. Yeah, yeah, that's true.
They do use the telephone later. They do use
later
it.
Later they do.
You know, there's a point. So the one last thing I want to say about CBs is that the FCC restricts Channel 9 to emergency communications and roadside assistance, which will also come up later in this movie, you know, when he starts talking,
you know,
on the
TV. I don't
think
I realize why. Yeah.
Yeah. And most highway travelers monitor channel 19, and truck drivers who still use CBs, they use it for effective means of obtaining information about road construction accidents. And most importantly, what's the most important thing that truckers, you think, use it for?
Oh, actually, I have no idea.
Speed traps.
Oh, of course. Why would I not think of that? I was thinking something more sinister, but yeah, that makes sense. Yep.
Yeah.
I was going back to those horror movies. Yeah.
There you go. Right. So the next thing you mentioned is television, which, you know, we both know most people don't use TV anymore.
Yeah, not so much.
They use the screen, but they don't.
Yes. It's not really television anymore. It's much like our phones are not really phones. They're pocket computers.
Correct. That's very true. So, do you know when TV was created?
I know it got huge in the 50s. I want to say it was probably – I'm going to throw out a number, and again, I want to say 1948.
Okay, it was actually started in the late 20s.
Oh, really?
Yes, but it took a while till it caught on.
Right, because everybody was on the radio.
Right.
I mean,
it didn't really catch on until after World War II.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it started becoming more popular in homes and businesses and different institutions and stuff like that. And then in the 50s, right, that's when it became the primary medium that people were using. Right. And then in the 60s, that's when they started with color broadcasting in the U.S. and things like that. So, but as we mentioned, most people just use their TVs now as screens. That's it.
Yeah, they're just screens. Yep.
Yeah, sometimes
I tried to watch.
Unless you want to watch the news, that's probably like it. It's like the only thing you're gonna.
Yeah, which I don't. I either stream something or I read it. But it was the last time I tried to watch live TV was the Oscars, and I had to. I couldn't. I didn't have a TV that could do it, and so I had to do a free trial for YouTube Red or whatever it's called, and just so I could watch the Oscars live.
I did that too. I did a free trial and I watched it on my phone. But for me, it's at 3 a.m. So it's a little different.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. But I got to watch it live, and I got to hear it uncut. You know, and I
was going to ask if it, yeah.
Yeah. And I was watching it, and I was saying to myself, is this you know, is this real?
Is this a bit?
Is that...
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit. I really thought it was a bit.
I was 100% sure. I was too.
When he screamed, when he started cursing and screaming the second time, at that point I knew it was not a bit.
Not a bit anymore.
Yeah.
No.
But
no.
Whatever, we won't go there. So do you know where the word television comes from?
Like the etymology of the word?
Yes.
Well, vision meaning sight. I should know this. Not specifically vision meaning sight. What would tele mean? I actually don't know.
Okay. No. Well, tele is from ancient Greek.
Yeah, I assume we were talking Greek here. Yeah. It's not telos. It's not related to the word telos, which is like the end goal of things.
That I don't know. It says what I found was is T-E-L-E, tele. Tele is from ancient Greek,
okay,
meaning far. And then and then visio.
Far vision.
Yeah, there you go. Visio is from the Latin meaning sight. So far sight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm glad that they called it television as opposed to far sight. You know.
Yeah, yeah. That's a whole different thing.
So anything good on far sight tonight? You know.
Yeah.
And people started using this term back in the early 1900s. There was a Russian scientist who used it. He presented a paper where he was talking about electricity and things like that. So, you know, and then it became anglicized much later.
Sure.
And the idea was you were able to transmit moving images over the telegraph or telephone wires and things like that. So they, again, the same root of tele fits for all of those. The idea is that it's coming from afar. The telephone, abbreviation TV, the abbreviation TV, actually, beforehand I asked you when was TV invented, and you told me 1948, right?
Yeah.
So the abbreviation TV was started to use in 1948.
Get out of here. That's great.
Yeah. There you go. And the term television set was started to be used in 1941, and it means television as a medium. You know, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, yeah. You know, a lot of fun things to find out about things that we know we think we know so much about. You know.
Yeah.
All right. So next we'll go to telephone. Okay. So
yeah.
Who invented the telephone?
Okay. See, I wonder if this is a trick question. I think it's Alexander Graham Bell, but is it just the guy who just made the first call?
No, he's actually the first guy who was granted a patent for it.
Granted a patent for it. Okay.
Yeah, but there was apparently a long list. No, there's a list of a whole bunch of people here. Charles Boursault, Antonio Meucci, Johann Philipp Reis, Bell, Alicia Gray. So there's a lot of controversy as to who actually created the first telephone, which is great because it means that you have six different people or five different people that around the world were creating pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Because
they saw a need. Yeah.
Exactly. But he was the first one who got a patent, and that's why he's mostly known for it, in March 1876. Yeah. So, no, I just love that idea. You know, I always thought it was Alexander Graham Bell, and, you know, when doing research, you find out that, wow, there are four other people that also created something very similar.
Yeah. Well, it's always the guy who he's got the better story, and that's why we hear that one.
That's true. That's true also. So then we have the whole idea of a full bar. Now, I wasn't going to look that up because there isn't really much to look up here, you know, like what, because I don't think there's a standard of what you're going to find in a full bar in the back of a limo. I don't think I could do, you know, even in on the internet, I'm not going to be able to, you know, type in full bar and I'll get a list of, okay, this is what you're going to have in a full bar on a limo in 1988.
Right.
Yeah,
that's true. I just Googled it just to see what would pop up. Limo. The limo bar, what should you get in it? Stocked with all sorts of drinks. Yeah, nothing in particular.
Exactly.
Although some say full-sized bar. I'm imagining – so when he describes it, because I don't think we see him later, not to jump too far, but don't we see him later drinking little mini bottles?
I believe so, yes.
I think we do, because I'm imagining at first, until I just said that, I was imagining, you know, that nice crystal decanter, you know, because this is Nakatomi, right?
But it's not Nakatomi, because it's Nakatomi is renting it, but it's not. He's
renting it.
Yeah, they hired him. Point. He's not that. So, yeah. And then we the last one we get is VHS.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a – do you know what VHS stands for?
Video Home System. This one I know. Yeah, that one
I'm pretty sure. That I didn't know. I was a big fan of VHS videos, you know, as a kid. And I didn't remember that it was called the Video Home System. Yep. Right? It was the standard for consumer-level analog video recording on tape cassettes. Okay. Yep. Do you know when they started?
The word VHS or the invention magnetic
tape? When they started using magnetic tape.
That's 50s, I know for sure.
Excellent. Wow, Tyler. You're great here.
50.
Seriously. No, the 50s. It says here the 50s.
Like a weird thing.
It says the 50s.
Okay, I was going to say 56 was my number, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that I don't have. It just says the 50s that started. And then it started entering home use in the 70s.
So, yeah, and 77 is the year I was pretty sure for that one too, but because I always thought wasn't it the one that really exploded VHS? I think was Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, or something like that. That's an important one for some reason. I don't remember why. But
right, that I don't remember. I remember that in 82, my parents rented a VCR for like a week.
Oh yeah.
So they rented like 20 movies for us to sit down and watch. Yeah. You know, I got to see some great classics at the time that to this day are still some of my favorite movies, even though they're not that great. You know, like the Legend of the Lone Ranger, I love. You know, the Clinton Spilsbury version of it, you know.
Sure.
And what other movie? The Frisco Kid, I remember seeing then, and My Fair Lady had. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I got to see back then. So, and obviously, you know about the big war in the 80s between the two formats, between VHS and Betamax.
Betamax. Yeah. Yeah, which actually, I don't think I've ever seen a Betamax. I assume it looks a little bit like a VHS, but I don't think I've ever seen
they
one
were
myself.
Smaller.
I've seen Laserdiscs.
They were smaller.
Were they smaller?
They were smaller.
Okay.
That's what it came down to. And obviously
it's
then...
kind of like 8-track and cassettes and things like that too.
Well, it's not as small as an 8-track, but it is smaller than a VHS. Sure. Yeah. Gotcha. And right, so you know he throws out all these different things, and they're continuing, and then he goes, well, if your friend's hot to trot, I know a few mama bears we can hook up with. Now this is way too forward, okay?
He doesn't know
anything.
Very forward.
You know, he's sitting. He's basically. I mean, I looked up what the term hot to trot means. Do you know what that term means?
Well, I assume it's sexual in nature, but I don't know.
Completely sexual in nature. It's someone who is very eager to have sex. You know,
I assume.
You know, the two of them are sitting in this limo, let's say for 10 minutes or something like that. And and you know, he's trying to pimp him out. You know, it's like
it's so weird. It's one of those. But what it does do is let us see Bruce Willis's reaction, and then he realizes, oh, is he married?
Yeah, exactly.
It's that awkwardness of Argyle that I love that makes him ask that question and then even go, oh, is he married?
Or is
he married?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But again,
it makes me wonder, is he doing that on purpose? Is he trying to get him to open up by this weird question or not?
I don't know. But part of the whole thing that gets me is he says, I know a few mama bears we can hook up with. So not only is he's not just saying I can find a girl for you if that's what you want. He's saying I can find girls for us.
Let's go party, man. We're gonna go. Yeah,
you know,
so weird. It's like he forgot that he's driving the limo, that he didn't rent it for himself.
Exactly.
You know?
I don't know. It's just you know. And then at this point, you know, you see Argyle, first of all, cracks himself up with everything he says. He's just laughing at everything that he says. And then he goes, or is he married? And then John responds, he's married. He goes, okay. And then at this point, John is sort of trying to change the subject, you know, and then he, like, you see him being disturbed by all these different, like, papers around him. Is it a map? Is it a food wrapping? Is it something? You know, we're not really sure.
No.
They don't completely say... What they don't show us what it is. We just see these type of papers.
Look at that.
Yeah, and I mean, first of all, it's just really funny the way that he says that, you know. And then, you know, and then our girl's response to this is, "Oh, sorry about that. It's the girl's day off. I didn't know you were going to sit up front." So, do you think
I didn't think he said girl until I saw the script here. I didn't think he said girl. I thought he said. I thought he said the groom's day off, like the butler almost is what he was meaning. Okay. So yeah, I actually didn't think about that until I saw this.
Right. Now, when I look at it and I say to myself, okay, he's saying the girl's day off. Is he trying to be funny here or whatever? Is he basically saying, you know, I usually have someone who I usually have a cleaning lady and she's off? Is that what he's saying here? I don't know.
That's with my interpretation of groom versus girl. That holds with me is the cleaning lady's day off is what he is saying.
Right. I always assumed before going through it today and thinking about the fact that maybe he's talking about a cleaning lady, that he's basically was saying that usually there's a girl who drives this limo and I have limo from her today.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and she didn't have a chance to clean up. I don't know.
Yeah. That would actually make some sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he continues with his conversation. Now, first of all, he goes, I didn't know that you were going to sit up front. So does that really matter? You know, you're supposed to have a clean workspace anyway.
Yes. You know? It's a limo. It's a limo, man. Like, it's supposed to be nice. What if it was Mr. Nakatomi, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
It's the
Mr. Takagi. Yeah. Mr. Takagi.
Mr. Takagi. That's right.
Yeah. And then he says, so does your lady live out here? You know, again, you feel the nervousness in Argyle. Yes. He's trying to change. You know, the two of them throughout this whole conversation, they keep each of them reach uncomfortable points and are trying to change things a little bit. You know, trying to make things a little more comfortable. You know, about the whole thing.
Yeah.
So he goes, so your lady live out here? And he goes, about the past 6 months. And he goes,
yeah.
Meaning you still live in New York. And then, you know, John gets a little uncomfortable with this and goes, she always asks this many questions, Argyle. And then Argyle laughs and goes, sorry, man, I used to drive a cab and people would expect a little chit chat. Now, first of all, I don't know if that's true. Would you?
No, not in L.A. I don't think in L.A. because
not anywhere.
Maybe in New York.
I don't know. You get in a cab, you don't, at least me personally, I'm not there to talk to a stranger. You know, should tell them about my life. Either. Well, you know, what's expected? I just find it really funny that he says that.
Yeah. Oh, that's my experience as well. I am in a cab, which I rarely use in the U.S. because cabs are so expensive. But again, I've lived overseas for a while and cabs are usually cheaper. And so I, at least where I lived, and I will say, that was my attitude. That was rarely my driver's attitude. They wanted to talk like crazy. And usually my poor language skills didn't help too often. So it was actually more of an embarrassment for me to talk.
Well, then they would probably try and talk to you in English, wouldn't they? Oh, English.
Yeah. And usually between the two of us, my broken, it was Indonesia usually, you know, some other countries too, but my broken Indonesian, their broken English, we got something done, but half the time I was kind of just like, please, it's too embarrassing. I'm really bad at it. Please don't, but
yeah,
it's fine.
Seriously. So, I mean, one of the first things is that how does Argyle know that he's from, that he came from New York? You know, John didn't mention anything about New York because Argyle is sent to go pick him up at the airport and he's picking him up at the baggage claim. You know, he doesn't, it's not like he needs to be at the gate by saying, okay, there's a guy coming in from New York. I guess theoretically they could say this is the flight number so that you can check to see when you need to be at the airport. That's the only thing I could think of about why they would have that.
Yeah, which baggage claim he would be at. You know, he's at belt 3 or whatever it is.
Right.
Although it seems like does John go to the actual belt and pick up
We don't see him pick up a bag. We see him walking near the baggage the turntables, but we don't see him pick up any bag.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait 2 years for him to get on the conveyor belt on that one. But you know, I think that if John would have sit in the back, he would have avoided this third degree. You know. He could just pick up the phone and pretend, you know. But again, it's for us. This is all for us. It is. There's no question about that.
Great exposition. Yeah.
And then we get a shot of the LA skyline and you see the Nakatomi building really standing out. You see it for the first time and it stands out, you know, and then he continues to get his questions even more and more personal. He says, so you divorced? And John's response is, drive the car, man.
Drive the car, man. Yeah.
He goes, hey, come on. You divorced? You separated? She beat you up.
I like that one, too. Yep.
He's really getting way too personal here.
Oh, yeah. And he's pressing. Like, just drive the car, man. You know, like, he's pressing. He's like, no, come on. Let's talk about it. Because this idea that he's the – that John McClane is the passenger and he's the driver and they should have this, you know, this partition between them is gone. And frankly, that's John's fault for sitting in the front. And so I feel like, yeah, he's just poking him and letting it happen. And I think, again, it's for us as much as anything else, but it's great.
Yeah.
It's such a good interaction.
Exactly.
And it lets us get that other tension of the movie set up that we don't even know is about to happen yet, because, you know, we are minutes away from Hans and his friends coming in. So at the moment, the only tension that we have is John and Holly and what is their relationship going to be like. And it's played very nicely. It's built up nicely here. There's that separation. Why is he still, you know, because, you know, at first, if we're not paying close enough attention, do we know, we don't know, is he coming home? Is he, you know, is he coming home to LA and seeing his wife? Is he visiting? You know, of course he says, I don't think he says I'm a New York City cop earlier on. I think he just says I'm a cop. I've been doing this for 9 years. So
yeah,
we don't know all of that stuff until of course, well, I guess he gets the sign. And so we know that he's visiting, but other than that, I like this is the way to do exposition in a film is have it be part of a conversation and to bring us in and for us to, for us to be taken right on the ride with these guys.
Right. So you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script and the novel?
The only thing is, and again, maybe this is one of those things where I've watched this movie so many times, so I know the importance of it there, but that LA skyline shot that you mentioned with just Nakatomi Plaza looming in front of us, it's fate filled, you know, it's, we don't know the reasons for it at the moment, but you just get the sense this is where we're going to be for the entire movie, and we are going to be from top to bottom of it, and it's just kind of looming fate-like, in his vision, in this hazy, which I'll talk about more, I think, in the next couple of minutes, but in the hazy LA light that we have there, it's great.
It really is. So the script has a few discrepancies here. So the first of all, when John meets up with Argyle, he says to him, don't you take this stuff? Meaning, you know, he's supposed to take his bags. And Argyle's response is, do I? I'm sorry. You're going to have to help me, man. This is my first time driving a limo.
That's great. That's Argyle getting out of work is what that is.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The script also mentions that you know, it focuses heavily on the Lincoln emblem on the limo. Mm-hmm. Totally. And before Argyle says, relax, man, he goes, just kick back and relax.
Sure.
You know, and okay, then there's the point with the wrapping paper or whatever it is. Okay. So it says, McClane tries to get comfortable, scowls at a rustling noise, reveals wrappers and styrofoam from Taco Bell. And he scowls at Argyle. So you see, you were trying to find the brands. You just had to read it in the script.
I was.
The script mentions it. And after Argyle keeps drilling him for questions, so McClane says to him, you're nosy. You know that, Argyle? And he goes, hey, I'm sorry. When I was a cab driver, see, people expected a little chit-chat, a little eccentricity and camaraderie.
Even more things I disagree with about that. But
then he goes, I forgot how stuck up you limo guys were, so excuse me.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So I'm happy
they didn't go there. I'm happy that's more relational and friendly, yeah.
Completely, completely. And so that's what we got in the script. And in the novel, so I guess you can call him Argyle, the limo driver. And Leland have a conversation about Christmas Eve. You know, so he goes, so what are you going to do for Christmas Eve? And he says, I'm thinking we're going to watch a whole lot of TV. My boy built me one of those big screen sets, you know, with the projector. Is he in electronics? No.
Oh, wow.
This is my younger boy. He's just 21. He's an actor, but he's really good with his hands. He got an ordinary TV, a lens, and a screen, and there I am.
Cool.
This is 4 feet across. It's just like a movie. You know, the Rams will look big in defeat this year. I'll tell you, the old world is turning into something else. So again, it's just added, it gives us a little bit more of a perspective of who this character is. Very
Sure.
different than the Argyle we know from the movie. No question about
Way
that.
different.
Very different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Argyle's not watching the Rams that night. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Because he's hot to trot.
He is hot to trot. Oh, shoot.
That's right.
And he's about to consume most of the minibar. Yeah.
Probably.
The
Yeah.
full bar.
My boss thinks I'm on my way to Las Vegas. All
That's right.
right. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition. So, Tyler, you got a nice holiday story for us?
Well, this is about when I was 16 or so, and this is Christmas. This one's a Christmas one. We had family coming and driving. So I was in right around then. I was in Ohio. I was living in Cincinnati, and we had family driving in from Toledo. My grandparents had flown in, and it was gonna be a nice full house for Christmas. And my, I think I must have been older than this. I think I was in college. Now that I think about it. I wasn't able to drink, but my grandma and grandpa came over, and they always liked their Christmas cocktails. They were really big on, oh, we're gonna have this fancy new this new Christmas cocktail. And so grandma went out, and my parents, weren't they like wine, but they weren't really drinking anything else. And so grandma went out and bought a really nice It wasn't. It probably was not real crystal, but it just a glass cocktail set with a glass shaker and everything like that, tumblers and everything. And she says, "I'm gonna make a. It's gonna be a chocolate peppermint martini, I think is what it was." And she was very excited for this. It was awesome. And they were gonna let me have a little sip of it, and I was very excited about that. My college 18-year-old self or whatever I was. So they get it. My cousin is one of the families that drove in from Toledo, Ohio. She was, I want to say she was 14, maybe. Grandma's helping, saying, "Hey, Erica, can you come help me with this?" And they're mixing the drink, and they're putting it into the shaker, and they're putting the top onto the shaker, but it's glass. And so my cousin starts shaking it for her, and the glass shatters in her hand.
Whoa.
Slices her all up, and she was a phenomenal piano player. And so that's basically how grandma and my cousins and their kids all spent the Christmas Eve in the ER. It was a thrilling, thrilling time for all of them. And now she's a nurse. I mean, apparently it was no lasting damage to her hands, but just I just remember cleaning up a lot of blood
Whoa.
and liquor from the ground at Christmas Eve. So,
Okay. Sounds like fun thinking back, but not having
yeah.
been there.
No,
Exactly.
no.
All right. So you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Yep. I'm on Twitter at Tyler Howitt. I'm on Facebook as well, but again, really not posting there too often. I'm on Instagram as well with that Tyler Howitt, and the Couch Potato Philosophy podcast will have Twitter and Instagram handles eventually, but we just don't at the moment.
So just search for them. And
Yep,
you'll find
just
them.
search for him.
There you go.
You'll find us.
You'll find it. Exactly. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. And you can go to our website. So, Tyler, if you like coming back again tomorrow and continue our conversation with John and Argyle, maybe we'll get some music around or stuff like that. Who knows?
Oh, yes, we will, and I can't wait.
All right. So until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.